Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we're going to read a story called We Stopped for Gas in the Adirondack Mountains. What we saw was horrifying. This is by Mindless Brother 3827 from Reddit. I hope you enjoy this story, and thank you for listening. Let's get started. The Adirondack Northway is a stretch of Interstate 87 in New York that runs from Albany all the way to the Canadian border in Champlain. Its most rural sections begin after passing through Lake George and Warren County. The road narrows, curves more often, and exits become increasingly sparse. Cell service is almost non-existent, and driving there can make you feel like you're slipping out of time. I was 17. And I just finished my junior year of high school. Around the same time, I finally received my graduated driver's license. In other words, no more curfew. To celebrate, a few buddies and I decided to take a road trip through the Adirondacks, driving north for maybe an hour or so, and then turning around and heading back, just for the hell of it. We'd grown up in Albany, only about an hour from the gateway to the mountains, so it felt like the perfect mini-adventure. There were only four of us. Me, a rising senior. Cody, another rising senior. Tom, a rising junior. And Sammy, a rising freshman we befriended a few weeks before at our high school's welcoming orientation. While Sammy was the youngest, Tom was the most impulsive of the group. We left later than expected, around 6:30 p.m. We drove for a while, taking in the views and gradually watching the sun dip below the horizon. Driving these roads during the day is relatively safe as long as you don't speed on the curvy sections. During the night, however, it's a completely different world. The road isn't lit at all, and your only source of light besides your high beams are the minimal number of cars driving around you. It feels quite eerie, almost surreal. We were laughing, sharing dark jokes with each other, talking about girls we liked, sharing our disdain for AP classes, etc. It was all typical teen behavior. Everything was fun and games until the orange, please refuel warning sign abruptly appeared right in front of me on the small screen behind the steering wheel. We only had 30 miles left. Sammy checked our location and realized that by our own carelessness, we had traveled over 250 miles away from home for nearly 3 hours. Tom played it off as inconsequential as a knot began to form in my chest, while Sammy frantically began searching Google Maps for the nearest exit. Just as he was about to make a suggestion, a sign appeared on the right, advertising amenities right off of an exit 39S in a town called New France. The road connecting the town to the interstate ramp was nearly deserted, but that didn't surprise us in the slightest. After all, we had traveled far north, well beyond where traffic thins and silence settles in. We made a right turn and began scanning the roadsides for the mobile station we'd seen advertised on the blue sign just before exiting the Northway. After roughly 3 miles, small, though unmistakably present, gas station appeared on our right. It had just two pumps, but since we were the only ones there, it hardly mattered. Beside the pumps stood a modest mobile mart, equipped with a single bathroom, and a few shelves lined with the usual assortment of unhealthy snacks you'd expect to find in an average off-the-highway rest stop. We were only there to get gas, but Tom, despite having already eaten an absurd amount of dinner, insisted on grabbing a variety of snacks he'd spotted through the window. Without a second thought, he headed inside to use the bathroom and make his purchases. Meanwhile, we finished pumping in no time and were finally ready to hit the road again, bracing ourselves for the inevitable lecture from our parents the following day. Pacing ourselves, we all got back in the car and waited for Tom to return. 5 minutes passed, then 10, then 15, then 20. Eventually, Sammy called him only to be greeted by the overly cheesy voicemail message everyone knew and, for some reason, loved. "Stop messing around and get back here," he shouted into the phone before hanging up, clearly annoyed. We gave it another 10 minutes. When there was still no sign of Tom, I finally decided to go in and drag him out myself. The inside of the store was fairly typical. Fluorescent lights humming overhead, shelves lined with snacks and travel essentials, a faint smell of coffee that had been sitting too long. What was unsettling, though, was the complete absence of a cashier. Even at night, there's usually at least one person behind the counter, half watching a small TV or scrolling through their phone. But here, the place was silent, empty, unmanned. There wasn't even any music playing. Before I could think of how to reciprocate, the lights illuminating both the store and the gas station all shut off at once, plunging the other boys and I all into complete darkness. My heart began pounding as I called Tom's name, over and over again without any response. I went back to the car to find my friends hyperventilating, begging for us to leave. They claimed that right after I had entered the store, a shadowy figure had followed me inside right before the power went out. Just as I was about to self-righteously assert how it would be completely wrong for us to leave Tom alone here deserted, we then heard a low, deep, but audible growl coming from behind the store. Without thinking, I floored the accelerator and drove back to where I believed the interstate ramp was located. However, after driving for 15 minutes straight, it was still nowhere to be seen. I decided to pull over on the shoulder and conduct some research on where exactly we were. Using the one bar of service I had left, I tried to do some quick research on where exactly we were. Strangely, there were almost no references to any place called New France this far north, but we brushed it off, assuming the town was just too remote, too peripheral to have that much of an online footprint. Eventually, I pulled up a travel guide for I-87 and scrolled straight to the exit list. That's when my stomach dropped. There was no exit 39S. There was a 39N, even a 39E, but no mention anywhere of a 39S or of any town called New France. Suddenly, the air felt colder. The mountains stood too still, and the trees, they seemed to be curving ever so slightly toward the road. Before I could react, I saw a figure walking along the road. He was still a far distance from the car, but close enough to make out some details. I raised my phone and zoomed in with the camera, and that's when the horror set in. The figure was wearing Tom's face. Not just looked like him, but wore his face. But it wasn't Tom. The gait was all wrong. Stiff, almost puppet-like. And the figure was too tall, his limbs moving just a bit too mechanically, like someone mimicking a human walk without fully understanding how it worked. Before I could react, it began to smile. Not a friendly smile, no. This was something else entirely, a twisted, sinister grin, the kind you'd expect from a cartoon villain, exaggerated, wrong, and almost theatrical. But this wasn't a cartoon. This was real. Something pulled straight from what internet weirdos like to call the uncanny valley. A being that looked almost human, but not quite. Just close enough to fool your brain at first glance. And wrong enough to make your skin crawl the moment you really saw it. Then I heard it. A deafening scream, inhuman guttural and impossibly loud, ripped through the air as the thing started sprinting toward the car. I slammed my foot on the gas and the car lurched forward, tires screeching as we sped down the road, running straight over the Tom facade in the process. There was a sickening thump, but I didn't dare look back. Inside the car, everyone was crying. Sobbing, really. We just wanted Tom back. We just wanted to be home, safe in our own beds, pretending none of this ever happened. I kept driving, trying to focus, trying not to fall apart, until another realization hit me like ice water. When I filled the tank earlier, I had 340 miles of range. I was sure of it. Now, I was down to 90, and we'd only been driving for 30 minutes. I also realized that I distinctly remember having left the gas station at 10:30. The clock in my car still read that exact same time. Now, I was more desperate than ever to escape whatever we'd fallen into. But it was no longer just about the town. It was the mountains themselves. It didn't feel like we were lost anymore. It felt like we'd crossed a threshold, stepped over some invisible border, and entered into someone else's dominion. And whatever ruled here didn't care who we were. It only cared that we'd entered. And now it wasn't letting go. I had stopped driving. The gas gauge was gradually getting closer and closer to E, and that's when we heard footsteps. We turned and saw Tom at the edge of the clearing, but it wasn't Tom, not really. He was tall now, too tall, his limbs stretched just a little too far, his shoulders crooked, like they'd been broken and never set right. His skin looked almost like skin, but waxy and pulled tight, as if his body had forgotten how to hold itself together. And his face? God. It was Tom's face, but wrong. The smile was too wide. The eyes were too glassy, unfocused. It was like staring at a mannequin's approximation of someone we had once loved. He took a step forward and then spoke. "I asked it to let you go," he said. "And it said yes. But I have to stay." He paused, his voice shaking. But not from fear. From something deeper. Surrender. "Don't come looking for me. Once I'm gone, leave. Immediately. Or it'll change its mind." He looked at each of us, his eyes flickering like a worn projection trying to hold still. "This place was never ours to enter. And I'm the price for our disrespect." He reached into his coat and handed us a folded map, old, creased, and slightly damp, as if it had passed through many hands before his. He didn't explain it. He didn't need to. Somehow we understood. This was our way out. Then, without another word, Tom turned. His movement was slow and almost mechanical, as if his body didn't quite remember how to walk the way it once did. He trotted into the woods, his frame swallowed by the trees, and we never saw him again. We unfolded the map under the dome light of the car. It showed roads none of us had ever heard of. No Waze results, no pins on Google Maps, nothing recognizable to any GPS system, but it was clear, intentional, marked with a path we could follow. So we did. We followed the paper map down winding, narrow mountain roads that didn't seem like they should exist. Unmarked intersections, faded trail signs, and cracked asphalt buried in leaves. But we kept going, and just when it felt like we might vanish into the trees again, we saw it. A dark blue sign, white letters, 87. I didn't even think. I slammed my foot on the gas and tore up the ramp, tires spitting gravel behind us as we surged back onto the freeway, back into the real world. We got home very early in the morning. Our parents scolded for staying out too late, but our car privileges thankfully still remained intact. Nothing unusual. However, what disturbed us most wasn't what happened in the woods, it was what came after. No one questioned Tom's disappearance. No police reports, no missing posters, no calls from worried parents. In fact, nobody seemed to remember Tom at all. Not classmates, not teachers, not even his own parents. When we mentioned his name, they just blinked, confused, polite, and distant, like we'd brought up a stranger. It was as if Tom had been erased, not just from the world, but from memory itself. Like the price he paid just wasn't just his life, but the right to have ever been. Even the photos on our phones had changed. Group shots where his face was once clear now had empty space, or the edge of a jacket with nobody attached. Text threads with his name were gone. Playlists he made disappeared. Only we remembered. And even now I can feel those memories starting to fade. Not all at once, but like a slow leak. Quiet, inevitable. The last we ever heard from him, or whatever took him, came a few weeks after it was all over. It arrived in the mail. No return address, no postage stamp, just a single envelope, aged and weather-warped, as if it had taken a long, unnatural route to reach us. Inside was one line, handwritten in uneven ink. "Stay out of our territory." And that's the end of the story. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, let me know. I appreciate you sticking around, hearing out the story, and enjoying yourself here, hopefully. If you did, let me know in the comments below or wherever you are listening from podcasts, I'm not sure what your options are, but I'm sure there's some way to reach out. Anyways, thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next one.